Welcome to the Rock Fight, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and joining me today, he doesn't need Mount Everest. He already has Mount Tam. It's Justin Hausman.
Good morning. I'm on top of Mount Tam right now.
Should we do that? Can we figure out a way to like record like from outdoor locations? I guess we could just make it up. No one really would know.
What do you mean? I'm up on Mount Tam.
Is it that windy up there? 1,700 feet or whatever?
How did you? Good, yeah, 2,700 feet. Yeah, probably is.
Is it 27? I said 1,700. It's 2,700.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I think it's 2,650 or something.
It is funny. Like, is it? I think it's no matter where you are. Like, everyone I've known from the Bay is always like, oh, you know, Mount Tam. And I'm sure that's almost like an orienting landmark, right?
No,
is that kind of
sure.
why people talk, right? It's like, oh, there's
prominent.
Mount Tam. I know where I am.
It's really prominent. And it's a pretty cool looking, like, from like three sides, it's almost a volcanic. Like, it's like a, it like, just like it's a perfect, like, wedge. So it's,
right.
Yeah. It's the tallest thing on this side of the Bay. There's Mount Diablo's taller in the East Bay, which is a double peak, which is pretty cool. Pretty like Mount Diablo's dope. You can actually see the Sierra from Mount Diablo, which is neat. You can actually see the Sierra from Mount Tam on like sometimes, like every once in a while, like if the air is super clear and it's like there's a lot of snow in the Sierra, you can see it from Mount Tam.
So what are you seeing there? There's like a little white
like
ridge,
way
kind
off
of a little
the
white
distance.
Line.
Yeah. Although I was on a backpacking trip once with my wife, like I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, in the Sierra, and we were at a cool trailhead that's like pretty high in the Emigrant Wilderness called Gianelli, and I think you start out at like 9,600 feet. And we were just kind of, you know, bopping around. You were kind of not above tree line, but there weren't a ton of trees. And we were looking to the west and kind of following, like you could see kind of, okay, here's the mountains. Here's where the valley starts. And there was this like peak, like way off in the distance. And I was like, what the fuck is that? And I started like, I got my map out and I was like, you know, kind of orienteering like where we are, what direction that is. And I realized that's Mount Diablo. That's like 200 miles away. And you can see it.
No way.
It's pretty cool. I mean, Jum, you're talking about being able to see the Sierra from like the Bay Area all the time, like on peaks in the Bay Area, like back in whatever that was, the 19th century.
Ah, he was high.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, was he? I'll bet he was.
I don't know.
I'll bet he was.
Well, today we're going to run through some of the more notable and exciting headlines to come out of the outdoor industry and community in the past week, including some news from the Mount Everest area. That's why we started with that Everest kind of joke. But before we get there, a few programming reminders. A hearty welcome to all of our new listeners. If you have just joined the Rock Fight, please throw some stones and follow the show wherever you're listening, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast app. Just please click follow so you're subscribed and you never miss an episode. And then head over to rockfight.co, sign up for our newsletter. It comes out every Sunday and includes stuff like outdoor history, outdoor industry history, our Justin Hausman retrospective, rose-colored Hausman. I need some more rose-colored Hausmans from you, buddy.
I know
you do.
I know you do.
Yeah, you send those over. And a bunch of other goodies. Go to rockfight.co and click on join the mailing list. And lastly, you want to pick a fight with the Rock Fight? Maybe to send us an email to say hi. We love hearing from our listeners, and we also want your suggestions for what Justin can do next weekend. This is your opportunity, folks. Send suggestions for what Justin should do next weekend to myrockfight@gmail.com.
Please don't throw rocks, actually, though, at us.
Well, you'd have to drive to our house or something.
Yeah. I don't want that.
What if like you opened email and like it looked like a rock was coming at you? You're like, ah!
I mean, you know? I just don't want to get hit by rock. I don't want to get into a rock fight, basically.
Like you're on the wrong show, man.
I don't want to get into a real one. So I just want to make sure people understand this is the metaphor.
This is the metaphorical rock fight. All right, well, we're recording this on Friday, May 3rd. See, I got it right in the outline.
You sure did.
I did, right? And you're hearing it. I probably almost screwed it up when I was writing this yesterday. And you're hearing it on Monday, May 6th. Which means that in between then and now, we had ourselves a weekend. In fact, Justin and I, while you're listening to this, we're still on our weekend because it's time for America's favorite podcast segment. Not what is Justin doing this weekend, but what are we doing this weekend? Presented by Long Weekend Coffee. Justin, what are we up to this weekend?
We have plans this weekend. I'm going skiing this week. I'm going to snow. I thought you knew.
Am I just going to be in the parking lot, that campground, wandering? Justin! Justin, are you here?
We're doing our first annual meet and greet, Colin.
Woo!
A little mountain bike meet and greet. See if you're real after all. I'm convinced.
Am I sure? Well, my wife shows up just wheeling a TV with my head on it, like
Max
Headroom.
That would be so amazingly cool. That would be cooler. I hate to say it. That would be cooler.
Like tie the TV to a bike.
Yeah. Just like, okay, all right.
I can do this, buddy.
Yeah, let's do this. That would be so
like
amazing.
Like an 80s after school special, yeah. Like your friend, the TV, or something
wanted
like
to be
that.
Real. And you're just.
It's a modern adaptation of Pinocchio.
Trying to drink a beer with you, just like clinking it on the glass on the screen.
Call so me R2-D2 cool. And
that'd
stuff.
That'd be so
you know?
Sweet. That'd be so sweet. Well, we're headed down to beautiful Montaña de Oro State Park in Los Osos, California, the Central Coast, to do a little mountain bike riding. We're going to do some surfing, but it's going to be windy as hell, so we're not going to do that. That's our plan. We're going to drink some long weekend coffee. We're going to...
Oh, yeah, we got to bring some long weekend coffee.
Long weekend
do you have a grinder, like a little hand grinder?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
You're
in charge of coffee.
Yeah. That's good. That's smart. But yeah.
Longtime listeners will remember that I'm not a huge fan of camping and that Justin is a huge fan of camping. So I'm just going to be relying on him the entire time.
Such a mistake.
Great.
Such a huge mistake. All my camping is solo. So, I'm sorry. You wanted a grinder you could use too? I don't think so.
Yeah, I brought 3.6 ounces of carne asada. That is not enough to share.
All my like camp equipment is like Justin. It says it's labeled and then in parentheses, only child underneath it. So just so that you know that I do not share my stuff.
What's parenting like as an only child? That must be tough. You have no point of reference for siblings or sharing or, you know, being fair.
No,
because
like when one kid grabs it from the other kid, I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get it. I mean, that makes sense.
Like she's older than you. You have to be stronger, you know? But yeah, but if you're in the Central Coast area, you listen to us on Monday, you might be able to come find us.
That's a good point. Good point. Yeah. You should.
Come ride with us.
Just don't throw rocks. But Colin's going to share his
look for the overly tall man riding around with a guy who has a TV on a bike.
And the overly tall man's wearing bedrocks. Colin's going to share his location data with everybody that listens to the rock fight later on today.
So follow my Strava.
Yeah, you can just hit him up.
All right. Well, what we're doing this weekend is presented by Long Weekend Coffee, which we'll be drinking this weekend while we camp. And we are taking suggestions for future editions of Justin's Weekend, which is typically what we talk about in this segment. But if you want to start your days off and your adventures and all your weekends off the right way, you head to longweekend.coffee, you load up on a batch of beans, and then you check out and you enter the promo code ROCK10 at checkout, and you'll get 10% off your first order. Long Weekend Coffee, we're kind of making this a long weekend on our own.
Sort of, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. More weekend and coffee, please. All right, so first thing I got for you today, I was reading an article on thetrek.co,
yes.
Which is like a hiking and backpacking site.
Yes.
And there was an article this week about two scientists who threw hiked the PCT last year.
Yes.
And they stopped every 10 miles. Have you read this?
No. I'm just saying a lot.
Okay. I appreciate your agreement and support of my narration here. Mm-hmm. They stopped every 10 miles or so to document and pack out all the trash they found within a defined sampling area to determine how much trash actually exists on the Pacific Crest Trail. So they didn't actually pick up everything or document everything they saw, but they kind of used, like a scientific method to kind of, determine like an estimation of how much trash is actually on there while also packing out anything they possibly could, literally pounds at a time.
Really?
And off in case. Yeah. It's a pretty interesting article. I think you'd enjoy it. But I want to start with you and ask you, what do you think the estimated amount of pieces of trash on the PCT is?
Estimated.
Yeah. This is after they did the whole thing. They would, like, every 10 miles, they would stop, they would take soil samples, they'd find things. They found everything from, like, a butter knife to car parts, right, which they didn't, backpack that out, right, the car parts. But
car parts?
Yeah. Well, think about, like,
good point. Also, like, there's parts of Northern California where, it crosses Interstate 5 at one point. So.
Yeah, totally. There was that whole tunnel section down here by the McDonald's. Then you get up into Oregon and you're going through towns.
Well, did they talk about that in there? I mean, like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, it was concentrated in the higher use areas, clearly.
Okay.
But there wasn't really a spot that they found, I think, where there was like zero. There was definitely very thin.
So that's anything from like a gum wrapper to apparently a carburetor.
Yes.
Along the entire 2,650 mile length of the PCT.
Correct.
I would get 10,000.
200,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah. That's what I was like. That's a really big number.
Wow.
Right?
I would
now,
like.
No, the other thing,
that's
too.
That's amazing.
Oh,
I just would like to know how much of it was like. I would like to. Did they plot it?
Yeah. There's a ton of info. The article, I linked it. It's in the in the outline. I think you should definitely check it out. I'll send it to you later so you can read it. I think you'd really enjoy reading it. But, the thing they point out, which I thought was interesting, it's like. there's most of the stuff is kind of incidental. Like, it's inevitable if you're out there, you're going to litter. Like, unintentionally. Like, just use something.
Like, accidentally.
Something in a pack. Yeah. Like, then, like, little corner from that packet of goldfish or whatever falls on the ground, right?
Yeah.
It's really hard if you're out there for 6 months not leave something behind.
Yeah, I guess
behind.
That's true.
Well, another thing they mentioned is, like, sometimes, you know, the tip of your trekking pole breaks off and you don't notice until the next time you stop.
Yeah,
right? Now that's left behind.
Yep.
So it is kind of inevitable that we're going to muck things up even with best intentions. But man, 200,000 pieces of trash, that's a lot.
I mean, I guess I've seen photos of people like packing out trash on the PCT with like giant garbage bags full of it. But I always just sort of assume those are in the high traffic areas. I mean, I'll say I don't really encounter a whole lot of garbage when I'm like way out in the middle of nothing, you know, like,
yeah,
I guess I have. And if I do, you know, it depends. Like if it's car, if it's like dispersed camping, but in my car, yeah, you're going to find it's like, sadly, like shotgun shells and like bottle caps. But, you know, backpacking, once you get out of the like obvious spots, like it's pretty rare that I find anything, but I guess you do, you know, I guess you sometimes do.
Yeah. I think even stuff that's close to a population area, like, you know, if it's like a mountain bike or a trail where people run or hike a lot, I mean, you find like the occasional like empty goo pack, things like that. And I tend to pick stuff up if I find it.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, I'm not usually like disgusted, like as I'm hiking on some of these places, even like on PCT, like close to my house where it's like, it's close to like Julian. It's like, you know, it's again, it's near a road. You'd think like, oh, it's easy on and off. A lot of people out here, but that's usually pretty clean, but it kind of makes sense. I mean, it's a long way to go.
How many bodies did they find?
Yeah. they didn't want to disclose that.
Pick up stuff, you know, like I'm amazed that people don't pick stuff up more often. I mean, I don't always, but like even around town, like if I'm walking downtown, if I'm just on a walk and I see like a can of like someone, you know, had a beer on the alley and left it, I'll pick it up and toss it in a recycling bin. I'm always amazed when you see people like note something and then keep walking by.
I have done that and then immediately feel guilty and go back and pick it up. You're like, oh, there's that thing there. Like, I should pick that up. You can go and pick it up. Yeah, the kind of bike path that's along the kind of main road near my house, it's a really busy road. And I think there's often trash on it. I think it's probably mostly because of like high speed vehicles and like stuff flying out of the back of like pickup trucks or whatever. But yeah, it's just like just yesterday there was kind of a piece of cardboard, a piece of foam, and then like a plastic bag. And I knew, and there's also because the city that we're in, there's lots of public trash cans.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not that long of a walk. I have carried stuff home before, but it's like, I know there's a trash can like 50 yards that way. I'll just go throw it away.
I feel like there needs to be way more like community accountability for things, you know? Like,
I agree.
Like that kind of thing is a great example. I don't know why I do know why, because like for the first few years I lived here, there were forest fires all the time. And like half of them are started by like trucks dragging chains. And like until you live somewhere where that's like a common thing, you're always like, why would a truck drag a chain? Like every day, like some truck is towing something and there's just a chain just ding, 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 ding along
next
the
next to a
highway.
Tinder pile.
And I'm always like, I have before been in situations where I can actually, like it's a slow enough road or they've stopped. And I'll be like, dude, you're dragging your chain, you know? And like usually they just flip you off. But like, it's like,
but you tried,
you know, like there should be so much more of that. You know, I feel like, you know, there have definitely been times where I've like been on a trail and like someone right in front of me has like walked past like a piece of garbage and like looked at it, kept walking, and I'll make a loud, like, geez, and like pick it up.
Speaking of they tried, have you seen the new Patagonia movie?
I thought you were, no, I, for some reason, when you said they tried, I was thinking of They Live, that like weird, horror film.
Speaking of They Live, have you seen the John Carpenter? Apparently, I saw a headline this morning, not impressed with Oppenheimer.
How old is John Carpenter? Like 1,000?
It's like, come on, dude. Like Oppenheimer was incredible. Go. I love you, John Carpenter, but it's time to stop.
There weren't enough
press.
Like bloody talking heads in it.
Yeah, I'm sure I wouldn't like Oppenheimer when I'm in my 80s too. And I've got like, you know, I don't want to watch a 3-hour movie. You know?
Yeah.
So, right.
But I've seen parts of it. I've seen part of
the Patagonia movie,
of the unpronounceable movie, the
Shithropacini. Yeah, I watched it yesterday. We've gotten multiple listeners have sent that over for some commentary. So I think you need to watch it. We'll address it formally down the road. But
okay, they've put out a bunch of movies lately too. By the way, I
usually like Patagonia movies.
I didn't like it.
You know, I think they have a self-awareness problem. I don't think they quite understand who they are anymore, or they're trying to be something that they're not.
I get that. Well, I will watch it. They put out a bunch of other like movies that aren't about themselves, like in the same week, like Leave It to Beavers, where it's like about beaver dams, and like another follow-up to Undammed, that really good dam movie they put out a long time ago.
Which is a really good movie, by the way.
Yeah, that's a good one. I watched a couple of those, but no, I haven't seen it yet. It's long. It's like an hour, right?
Or
like
45 minutes. Yeah, there's a little too much featuring our. Let's feature ourselves in this, and it made it just feel. And it's also trying to be funny, and I think the general brand tone of Patagonia is not funny. Like you know, it can be enthusiastic. You know, like when you see like people like dancing and doing their R1
it's
video
kind of
or whatever.
Wry. I would say Patagonia has a bit of a wry vibe.
Sure,
maybe.
But they're trying to go full mockumentary. They're doing this Philomena Kunk rip off. It had the opposite effect for me of what I'm like. I'd rather just go watch like four back to back, like John Oliver rants on this topic than sit through this.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't really want to watch any documentaries ever about something that's bad.
Well, and that's their point, is they're trying to bring some levity to the situation.
Right.
About fast fashion and whatnot.
Sure. But I know about fast fashion. I know that we have too much stuff. I know that capitalism is probably horrific. I'm at this point pretty well convinced that Western civilization is the worst thing that's ever happened. right. I'm there. I know all this. I don't want to watch a documentary about Ukraine. I don't want to watch a documentary about Gaza. I don't feel like I need to. That sounds bad. I'm not trying to say I don't want to be informed, but it's gonna be it's a tough ask for me to put on a 45-minute documentary about how we have people buy too much clothes. I know that.
No, but you are informed. That's why you're saying that. I agree with you. That one about Ukraine that won the Oscar, which I'm sure is absolutely incredible and timely and summarizes everything to how I probably personally would feel of it. I know it would just I would not look forward to that experience.
I don't want a movie to end and me to be like right. or look at my daughters and be like, fuck. You know?
Right. And I think what you just summarized is my beef, and I think I said we're not going to spend too much time on it, but just to kind of last, I don't know who the audience is. I think it's actually what it comes down to. Because the audience is guys like you or me, or people like you and me, well, we already know this stuff. And I think the tone of it was off-putting enough that if you're not already a Patagonia fan, it might have the opposite effect, and you might just be like, stop pumping your own tires so much in this film. So that was my takeaway. It's like, I guess, good job on the swing. You took a big swing. You tried something new that you'd never done before. But this on the heels of fashion is none of our business, then this is just a little kind of continuing that trend of you got to get that self-awareness back. Go back to sewing in, vote the assholes out labels. That was great. Don't buy the jacket. Great. These really sort of simple things that are really impactful. So that's just
my I'm reserving judgment until I see it. I mean, I stand by my sort of waffling belief or not belief. I don't know what I'm trying to say that, I don't know enough to know whether or not it's more impactful to have a huge brand that sells a lot of stuff but gets the right message out versus just not existing at all. I don't know what the answer is. And I tend to all the other movies that they made last week are really good.
Really good.
And,
yeah.
And very impactful and very important. So I tend to give Patagonia the benefit of the doubt. I'm gonna watch it. I think maybe I don't
know.
You
said you weren't going to watch it.
I did. So, I said, but now I feel like I should, so we could talk about it some more. But I you know what I did watch that I really enjoyed that made me feel like $1 million. This awesome series on I think Disney about octopuses. So great.
This wasn't the octopus teacher one, was it?
No, it's probably similar, but it's I don't remember what it's called. The Kingdom of the Octopus, The Rise of the Octopus. It's just amazing. And when it's over, you're like, God, I love life. I love the planet. I love all this. And I'll be honest. I'm much more likely to be thinking about my impact on things and what I can do about something, watching something that's really beautiful that isn't even talking to me about oh, and by the way, they're totally fucked. It's just hey, look at all this amazing stuff. It's that's what makes me want to pick up litter and stuff, go outside and do the right thing. Not I just don't need any more. We don't cover negative stuff anymore at Adventure Journal. We just stopped. It's what I don't need to write about the pebble mine. I don't need to write about something that's been devastated. I mean, it just doesn't seem to. I don't know. That's just not what that's not the kind of news I want.
Let's get into some headlines.
Let's get into some heads.
So we talked a few months ago about the news coming out of Everest of some new regulations to control littering and poop on the mountain and the kind of the out of control growth happening there. Well, there was some news this week. Actually, a lot of news came out of Everest this week. And per explorersweb.com, Nepal's Supreme Court has ordered the government to limit the number of climbers allowed on Everest. It also bans helicopters above base camp on all its mountains, apparently, which they've been shuttling stuff up and down Annapurna lately.
Yeah.
But it orders new regulations to limit garbage on its peaks as well. So according to the justices, the government can only issue climbing permits after specifying how many climbers will be allowed according to available capacity, and helicopter flights above Gaze Camp will be banned except for rescues. And finally, climbing teams must submit a list of gear and supplies they are carrying up the mountain and must leave a deposit.
Oh.
And they receive back their deposit only after proving that they brought everything down.
That's a cool idea. That's a really cool idea.
This is like... We should do that.
We should do that somehow. Like, I don't, this would obviously be a huge headache, but it would be kind of cool if you, I don't know how that would work. You know, there's no way for it to work. I was just going to say, it'd be kind of cool if, like, when you went to get like a backpacking permit somewhere, they like weighed your pack. And it's like, if it weighs less, when you come back, you're, like we're keeping that deposit.
You take your food and water out and weight your base.
Makes it like, did you leave something out there? You know, but like, yeah, that's cool. That's
There's 200,000 pieces of trash on the PCT?
Yeah. That's a cool idea. Good for you, Nepal. But that's only on the Nepal side, obviously.
It's only on the Nepal side. I mean, it's going to be, you know, how are they going to enforce it? You know, there was some mentions in the same article about, you know, some of the richest outfits are partners with the helicopter business. So they're already getting pushback for it. But I mean, none of this stuff happens without, you know, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how, I actually don't know. I mean, I have no idea if you don't get a permit, what happens? Like what is there somebody checking your permit? Like, I've never understood how that works. Like,
and I got to think this will start next year, right? Cause there's already people on the mountain. It's prime climbing season right now. So
I just, I could look into that, obviously be an easy answer, but I've always wondered about that, you know? So you have to pay a lot to get a permit. Like, I think, like, it's a significant amount of money, I think.
It is. But that's the only thing they cap it.
But also, who's checking? Like, do they?
Like, who's rolling up to that badass new sign at Everest Base Camp going, all right, let's see your permits.
Is that how it works?
I don't know.
Have you ever seen that? Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Me either.
Well, and actually, that kind of segues into the next piece that came out of Everest this week. I sent you that video. Like, we always hear these stories about... about Everest Base Camp, about the trash on the mountain or whatever. Well, someone shot an aerial view of Everest Base Camp this week.
Yeah.
Do you see how vast it is?
It looked like Lollapalooza.
Maybe bigger.
That's they don't do it in Lollapalooza anymore, right? That was like when we were kids.
No, they do. There's one in Chicago this summer.
Okay. I should have said Coachella.
Trying to date yourself there?
No, I didn't mean to. I'm like, wait, is that even a thing anymore? Should I said Coachella?
Whatever, boomer.
Hey. Not even close, asshole.
I'm older than you.
Yeah, exactly. So but you're not even close. Come on. Wish. God, I wish.
So you were a boomer?
Yeah, we would be having the show. We would be probably retired and like.
That's true.
We'd be hanging out and like we wouldn't be worried about anything. Isn't that amazing? We'd be worried about nothing. Or we'd be worried about something that was stupid. But,
right. Well, Trump's going to come along and save us pretty soon. It'd be great, you know?
God, I wish I was a boomer. Anyway, what were we talking about?
Everest Base Camp video.
Oh, yeah.
I'll link it in the show notes. It's incredible. It kept going. It just kept going and going and going. How many tents? How long would it take to walk from one end to the other? Like an hour?
Probably because you're pretty high elevation and you get real tired. They probably have like, okay. Do they have like electric bikes up there? People just like whizzing around on like rad power bikes
from the
McDonald's to their tent
to go get your massage and then go to the movie theater.
It's amazing. But you know what's cool about this is it feels like it's getting a little bit closer to my dream of like Everest just being canceled for 5 years. Like,
yeah,
it's like little baby steps toward that.
All right. Next thing we have up, we had a study came out this week that according to campsite booking app, The Dirt, you ever use The Dirt?
Nope, but I know of it, but I know I don't use it.
So apparently less than half campers, 42.7%, used all the reservations they made
in
2023.
That's so annoying.
In a press release this week, The Dirt states that amid the overall increase in the number of Americans who camp and the scarcity of campsites, over-reserving campsites
has become a
strategic exercise to make sure you have a spot.
Yep.
Of the campers who canceled a reservation in 2023, 87.3% canceled with more than 48 hours notice and 32.2% pulled the plug with less than 48 hours notice. Some canceled multiple reservations in different time frames. And that leaves sold-out campgrounds with open spaces going unused. So you camp more than I do. Like, you think this is a real problem?
Yes, this is a huge problem. I mean, you have to do it, though, to a certain degree. So, like, especially in the Bay Area, they open campsites, like, 6 months in advance. It's kind of a complicated situation. But we were just the beneficiaries of this a few weeks back. Like, my next-door neighbors wanted to go camping at this zone over by the ocean near us. And, they booked like 2 weeks because you can book up to 14 days or whatever.
Right.
And that's kind of the only way to secure like you book that like 6 months in advance. Okay. I have these 2 weeks. And then like, you kind of decide, when can I go? And then you know, like in their case, they couldn't. So they like, ended up like going, okay, you can go for us on these few days and you can go for us on these few days. And then like a few of the days just never got collected. Like the site next to us was empty the night that we were there. Probably a similar situation. Like someone booked it and like, you know, just couldn't quite get there, but you have to, cause like you can't, for some reason, I'm not sure why it matters. It's like really hard to book one day, you know, like you have to kind of book a bunch at once, but yeah, it's a huge problem. I mean, I thought it was just at first when you were reading that, I thought that was just going to be people that like legitimately just didn't show up cause they, you know, couldn't, but yeah. And I mean, I've done it. Like I've, you know,
sure.
You kind of have to, you know, like when I, or even, you know, backcountry sites are the same way, you know, like I booked a bunch of sites in Yosemite last summer. Or permits, and then like the weather turned to shit, and I was like, well, I can't go. And so I would always like call and cancel. So they're open for walk-ups, but like I'm sure there were people that would have booked had it been available. So
this is just kind of the nature of it. I mean, I feel like if I'm booking a last minute trip, I know I'm going to be limited by my choices because I didn't plan in advance.
It's not, right? Yes, but also that sucks. You know, I mean, like,
well, it definitely sucks, but like, what do you do about it?
Well, more campgrounds. I mean, I think ultimately what this means is that, you know, that's like there are more people camping than there ever have been before. And like, how often do you hear of a brand new campground? I mean, it happens, but it's not often.
Right.
And so you have like, you know, a much bigger population than we had at all, like in the 50s when most of these campgrounds seems like they were built. And then you have more people camping than we had per capita than back then. And they're all trying to squeeze into campgrounds that were built decades ago for an entirely different population with an entirely different like outlook on camping. So of course it's going to be like this. So I just think we need way more campgrounds. It's going to be like this without, I mean, you can like get fancy and weird about like reservation systems. And like, I know they're trying to change it a little bit. So it makes it easier to sell sites that have been like, cause as it is now, like a lot of these places, they don't have any like infrastructure. So like if you cancel, there's no way for them to know. There's no way for them to like check, you know, so they're out in the middle of nothing. And so, you know, so if there's newer ways apparently to make it easier to buy sites that have been canceled, which is cool. But honestly, just more sites. We just need more campgrounds. Or you just make everything first come, first serve and just say tough shit, you know, like, I don't know.
I was saying that's an option. I mean, it definitely, I feel like it impacts people, you know, especially like on the East Coast where you don't have the abundance of BLM land like we do. Like, so if we decide last minute, I want to go camping. No, yeah, I can't get a reservation. There's places we can still go. Right?
I very rarely use campground reservations because unless like it's, if it's in the summer, I never do for the most part because I'm just dispersed camping. Yeah. So the only time I really do is when the mountains are like covered in snow. So,
right.
And it's you know, it's a huge issue. I don't know what to do. But I mean, here, you know, I live in a place that's very outdoorsy. There is one, that's not true. There's two. Only one of them is really desirable. There's like one campground area, one state park that people really want to camp at. And it's, of course, it's always booked. You know, like you can show up midweek, maybe, but not in the summer. But like you could now maybe get a site. But in the summer, it doesn't matter. It's always booked. There's another less desirable one kind of on the other, you know, kind of inside the bay. Or not inside the bay, but like facing the bay where it's hotter and it's not quite as nice. And like, you might be able to get sites there, but not really. But that's it. There's nowhere else to go. There's literally no other campgrounds. So like on the, you know, millions of people live up here.
I don't know. Maybe this is a matter of like what you want to do. Cause like the idea of like, if I live in Oakland and like that one on the other side of the bay is like, I probably wouldn't want to go camping there anyway.
Well, there's other ones. I mean, those are like in Marin. Like there's other, I mean, like, you know.
Oh, there you're talking about that. Well, okay. Well, even say Sam Taylor near your house, right? Like, I know you like to pop up there with the kids every once in a while, but it's like, that's not your preference. If you want to go camping, you wouldn't be like, oh, let's just go to that place. You'd want to go somewhere else where you don't normally get to go.
That's 100% true. So yeah, good point. But I mean, I'm also, this is kind of what I do for a living. So there's a lot of people who go camping once a year, you know, but the Bay Area is notoriously bad for it because it's a pretty outdoorsy community and there's no open like public lands around here. None, you know, you have to drive at least 3 hours to get to anything like that. So, but really a little bit further really. So it's for the most part, it's, you got to book your sites and it makes it really hard and everybody grumbles. Everybody hates it. I don't know anybody who doesn't.
I don't know, man. I'm kind of in there. Like, you can always find some place to go. Like, there's a place.
You really?
Yeah, sure.
I swear to God, man. You would not. Well, if you're booking 6 months in advance, yes. But if it's like Thursday, you're like, oh, the weather looks great. Let's go camping this weekend. No, you're screwed. You know what you can do? You can pay $100 a night at a hip camp. Like someone like, well, like you can put their tent, you know, your tent up in their like horse pasture or something for like $100. Like you can usually find something like that, but
get out of your comfort zone. Then, like, yeah, I understand. Like same thing. The campgrounds. How dare you? If it's a weekend, get out and go find that unused piece of BLM land, like pull over and set up your tent, like figure it out, you know, come on.
I just said there isn't that though. I mean, like there is, if you want to drive 4 hours.
Oh yeah, no, there is where there isn't.
Yeah, and this is that, like, this is that. Like, I mean, a lot of people, most people don't live near BLM land. That's BLM land because it's isolated. Like most people don't live near Forest Service land because it's out there because it's isolated. So most of us, that's a huge commitment to get to it. But you know what else you can do? You can just camp in your house.
That's what I'm saying.
Make a little tent.
Be better at planning.
It's pretty pretty cozy. I don't like that. That's the thing. this is actually a big like issue with me. I don't want to have to plan camping. Like the whole fucking point of camping is like, I want to sleep outside tomorrow. You know, like the mood struck me to go outside. And like, that's why people like, I love to talk crap about like Denver or like Colorado, generally speaking, because I'm really envious of it. Because it's like, you can live right in all these places where you can just like backpack from your house. You know, like there's so many options there. And I guess, you know, I guess if you lived like in the foothills of California, you could do that too. Cause you could just bang into Sierra, but like, I don't have that option. And so it annoys the shit out of me that
you have a bit of a drive no matter where you're going to go, unless you're going to go to these little local places. That makes a lot of sense. I get that.
Yeah. And that's how most people are though. I mean, cause most people live in urban areas. Can I tell you a cool story about where we're about to go camping?
Yes.
That I think our audience would appreciate.
Let's do it.
So, I don't know if it's like at this campground and you're going to think I'm making this up. But I'm not at this campground, or at least I'm sorry, in the state park. I don't remember when this happened, but it definitely did. This isn't like a urban legend. Somehow, some way, well, probably pretty easy. They saw him, but like a guy was busted like decades ago for like getting into like an outhouse and like being under the toilet,
in the toilet.
Just like he had this weird like fetish or whatever, but like you'd women would go in there and like squat on the thing and like do their biz. And there was just a guy under there. And like,
they caught him doing it.
Yeah. And like, they finally like, and they pulled him out, but like, it was like a big news story.
How long was he in there?
I don't know. I don't know.
How did he get in and out?
Don't know.
Just like through a hole.
I don't remember any of that. Like, I have no idea, but
is it weird that I'm more excited to go now? Like,
I don't know. I can't point out which outhouse it was.
But well, you better figure it out before we get there.
It's still like the gnarliest thing I've ever heard. Apparently that's happened in other places too. It's like
people. If you can't find me for a few hours, don't go searching around the outhouses.
Yeah, all right.
Okay? Because, you know, I won't be there, I promise.
I don't know if he was in like a hazmat suit or like what. I don't remember the details.
I'm sure that was part of the allure for him, you know?
Isn't that wild?
People are fucked up, man.
Some people, yeah, yeah.
All right, well, the last story we got today, Rock Fight paddling correspondent Joe Potocek from Paddling Magazine reported this week that he reported in Paddling Magazine, this past week, a story of a man missing in the Grand Canyon. Joe writes that the National Park Service is searching for a missing man and his dog in the Grand Canyon and believes the pair may have launched on the Colorado River on a homemade raft. Actually included a picture of the raft if you want to take a peek there. Oof. On April 21st, 2024, the NPS located a presumably abandoned Toyota Tacoma belonging to Thomas Lee Robeson of Santa Fe, New Mexico, at Lee's Ferry, the launch point used for the majority of paddlers embarking on a Grand Canyon River trip. In a press release, the Park Service published images of Robeson, who's 58, with his 11-year-old Welsh Corgi,
aww,
along with a photo of the homemade wooden raft. Neither have been seen since this writing on April 29th. Are you looking at that?
I'm looking at it. So this picture, where did they get this picture? Like, he took it himself?
I don't know. That's the one thing I didn't say I looked for. I don't know where they got the image, but I think they seem pretty confident that this is what he was on. For the folks listening, it's literally like three planks of wood that somehow kind of in a very rudimentary way lashed together. And he's got
they have some pretty intricate carvings on them of like fish and plants and
or
stuff.
Whatever the aliens told him to carve, you know, like, but he also has an old school, it's not even a PFD, like an old school life jacket, like an over the neck one.
Also,
that like will
really
keep you
well
afloat.
Illustrated. Yeah.
So, you know, my guess is like, we're never going to see this guy again, right? I mean, it was his, what do you, I'm trying more, it's well, more of like, what's his intentions here?
Okay. So 58, so he's not that old. I mean, this is, I don't.
He took his dog.
Yeah. This, I mean.
Down the Colorado River.
I just read a story the other day about this like crazy billionaire guy who I forget which, like a mountain you've heard of, like went like mountain climbing and like apparently just like walked off and everyone was like, oh, he died, I guess. Oh, well. And like they had like a funeral and everything. Like, no,
they
just
never
like,
found him.
No, they did. He just like went. He's like living in Cyprus with some like 19-year-old girl or something. So I don't know. Maybe it's something like that. I don't know.
That's actually I hadn't considered that. I'm thinking, is this a suicide thing? Like, is he just sort of like, hey, man, if I'm going to go, I'm going to load up my dog on my 3-plank raft and go paddle down the Grand Canyon and see how long I can last.
Bodhi at the end of Point Break, where he's just what? Like, let me out. I got to do it, you know? Like, I don't know. That's gnarly. That sucks.
I do love the renegade spirit, though. I think we should celebrate people who want to charge into the wild.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't have an issue with
comfortable.
That. I know that there's, like, issues with, like, okay, it costs money to rescue people when they do something. I totally get all that.
I understand that.
But the spirit, I totally celebrate.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care what obviously he had the potential outcomes here. I mean, but you go on the Grand Canyon, it's going to be gnarly even if you're with a seasoned guide, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like there's a lot of things that can happen there, and you're on what he's paddling on. I'll make sure I link to that too in the show notes. If you folks at home can see what we're talking about, but you know, I think it's just kind of like, you know, good for you. Like, you know, this is the way I'm going to go out, or if he's in Cyprus with a 19-year-old and his little corgi, and this was just like to mislead everybody, whatever. Good for you, man.
Well,
is there any sort of like crazy thing you flirted with doing in the backcountry? Like, have you ever kind of like, or what would your equivalent be? Because there was another story, I forget the name.
It's a good question.
There's someone who I'm pretty sure they decided it was a suicide. He went up on Mount Lafayette, which is in the White Mountains in New Hampshire in winter, and just sat down and just, and he froze to death. Right? I mean, it was an exposed day. It was like windy and like probably
what a wild way to do it.
Yeah, and I should find, you'd actually find the story probably pretty interesting. I'll find the details on it, but like that was just sort of like, all right, you know, this is it. And went up there and punched out.
Kind of
a bummer to the people who had to bring him back down.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, that sucks. I've never really thought about it. I mean, I've read plenty of stories about people like making homemade rafts and doing these like wild things or whatever. But no, I don't think I have like a big ambitious wild sort of thing like that to do. At least not that I've ever thought of before. I mean,
look, I think there's probably a good chance on our Grand Canyon guy that, you know, maybe he's intentionally, you know, trying to end his life. At the same time, I really hope he turns up and we learn more about like what he was thinking.
He's
going off on his three planks.
He's managing a Cinnabon somewhere.
That'd be the best.
Yeah.
Have you met what was his name? What was his name?
The Grand Canyon guy?
Thomas Lee Robeson. Yeah. You met Tom? He's got a corgi. He manages the Cinnabon down the street at the airport.
I was talking about the Grand Canyon.
He said he paddled the whole thing on 3 pieces of wood. Isn't that crazy?
That's how I end the story. I mean, this isn't like me making this up, but like that's how I end the story of the Placid expedition, where like this old guy in this nursing home would be telling all the people there that he rode a snowmobile to the North Pole. And they're all like, all right, whatever, crazy guy. And his son was like, no, he actually did that. That's amazing.
That's the best.
Yeah.
I hope I'm like, you know, old and delusional one day, just like telling stuff that I, you know, some of it I did, some of it I didn't. You'll never know.
And neither would you, frankly.
I'm happy either way.
Yep. So.
All right, man, we can wrap it up there. I guess we should, I was going to say what's going on, but I guess I know what's going on. You're packing for your camping trip.
Yeah,
I got to pull some bins out. I got to go find my tent.
The bins, yeah. I wasn't going to bring a tent, but now it's going to be cold, so I got to bring a tent.
Why? Just put the, just drop the sides on the, soft topper.
I'll still bring a tent just in case. Yeah. Good point.
All right. Well, that's the show for today. You listen to The Rock Fight. It's a production of Rock Fight LLC. For Justin Hausman, I'm Colin Truth. Thanks for listening. Do all that stuff we said at the beginning. Go click follow. Go sign up for our newsletter. Do all the good stuff. Share the show. Share our website with some pals. Spread the Rock Fight words, the word of the Rock Fight, I should say, with people that you know who might be interested. Or maybe people who aren't even interested. That would be great. So, anyway, he's here to take us out. Chris DeMakes, he's going to sing the Rock Fight song right now. And we'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight!